Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. I'm Valerie Bowling. Pharma Talk Radio is a nonprofit program to disseminate helpful information to those in life sciences, and in particular, drug development and drug delivery. This podcast is a recording from the inaugural Drug Delivery West Conference featuring Yuri Baruch, Head of Drug Delivery at Cambridge Design Partnership. Yuri walks listeners through a process of how to innovate in the drug delivery space. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you all for being here. It's a pleasure. When Valerie called me, I think about 5-6 months ago, to actually ask me to give this talk here, I was actually at San Francisco Airport flying back to the UK, and I was very excited to hear that the team and Valerie were thinking about doing a conference that's not just about the formulation, but is also thinking about devices and taking more of a focus in the device space, because I believe that the combination of the two is going to play a much bigger role in the coming years. Devices are going to play a vital role in the therapy itself and will be crucial to delivering the therapy in years to come. When she told me what she wanted me to speak about, I wasn't so sure. I was excited. So, a bit about Cambridge Design Partnership, just so we know who we are. There's a blurb there, and you can read later if you want to. We're an innovation company. We're a product development company. We're a multidisciplinary team of engineers, physicists, human factors, researchers, really bringing together a multitude of years of experience to innovation. And we've done innovation for a long time now. Some of the areas we've worked in drug delivery, and this is only a subset, we've worked in a lot more. I'll give you a bit of an idea of some of the areas of expertise we have and some of the areas where we've seen difficulties. And we've innovated in, and we've also seen problems in. One area that isn't actually showing here is connectivity, because it's not really a device per se, but it's an overarching field that actually connects all of those. And in recent years, we're seeing more and more in that space, just to touch on what was discussed before. So innovation, right? How do you innovate in the drug delivery space? And I think I was asked, I mean, I'm not a formulator, so I'm not going to discuss how we innovate in the formulation space. I'll leave that to the formulators in the room. You probably know that a lot more than I ever will. But how do you innovate in a device space? How do you innovate in the combination space? And I've been thinking about this problem for a while now, and it's not an easy problem. How do you teach people? How do you explain to people how you innovate? It's something that comes out of experience and comes out quite naturally, but actually, sitting down and putting it down to paper and explaining it is not an easy task. And it was quite daunting when Valerie first asked me to do this. But when I sat down and thought, the first thing I thought about is, okay, let's look at the innovation process and let's look what actually we do on a day-to-day basis. How do we work a problem out? And I said, what are the basic building blocks ahead of actually innovating? So the first thing, which I think was discussed yesterday very, very eloquently in the patient group, is understanding the needs, understanding the unmet needs of the therapy area, of the patient group, of the people we are actually trying to treat. So jobs to be done is one of the approaches we use, and it's a solution-agnostic, evidence-based identification and prioritization of user needs. What does that actually mean? It means that we try to find out what users actually do in their day-to-day life, not what they want, but what they actually do. So rather than asking them what they want us to design, we try to figure out what their main issues in their life are. What are the unmet needs within those areas? What are the things we really need to solve? And we're talking about high-level problems, not just make my device slightly smaller or slightly bigger, but really is, let's take diabetes, for instance. I really want something that will help me just manage my disease, just help me day to day. Right? That's my overarching goal. I just need it to be less of an issue. Right? That's the start. That's what they actually tell us. I just want it to be less of an issue. I don't care how you do it, but just make it simpler. And that's the first thing. The second thing is the development process. So it's not the innovation process, but actually how we take the ideas and we progress them. And I'm sure you're all familiar with something of the sort in a development process, and you've seen this. And the reason it's on there is that I like the graphical representation of the bars are actually engineers or specific disciplines that are engaged in the development process across the timeline. And you can see that disciplines come in and come out and go out and come back in at a later stage. So you might get researchers very early on who will later on test the device after it's been developed. And you'll get people interacting very early on from a manufacturing point of view to actually tell you whether it's actually manufacturable. That idea that you had that is a very good idea, but there is no way you can ever make it in volume, for instance. So that's something that is crucial to any innovation process. The one thing that's missing, especially in drug delivery, it's very relevant in the medical device space. In drug delivery, that's one thing that's missing. That's a huge thing that's missing that's overshadowing all of this. And it's this. Formulation and primary container. That's the one thing that starts everything we do. Basically, most of the innovations we ever, most of the projects we ever work on will start from someone actually saying, I've got a syringe with a formulation, and I think I know the dosage, and I think I know the viscosity, and can you put a device around it? And by the way, can you actually find me a device, because I'm already in phase three anyway, right? I'm planning on it, right? That's the situation 50% of the time, if not more. And the problem with that is that the formulation and the primary container, they dictate the timelines, not the device. We're working towards, the innovation is working towards the formulation timeline. We need to be there when the formulation is ready for the clinical trial. No one's going to wait for us, right? It may require specific delivery methods that we haven't developed yet, but again, we have very short timelines. And a lot of time, it locks in the device type and the size. And someone said to me, I think actually this week, he said, it's really interesting. Basically, what we're doing is we're wrapping stuff around an existing container. That's what we're doing. Right? Unless we're redesigning a completely new container, everything is we do is we're wrapping plastic or plastic and metal or plastic and metal and a chip around an existing container, which makes innovation actually very, very hard because you have to innovate within a very confined space. So the innovation challenge. What do you actually need in order to innovate? The first thing you need is to be absolutely comfortable with the feeling of unease. And what do I mean by that? Innovation is hard, and it's hard to get to good ideas, and it's hard to get to ideas that actually make sense. And our first approach is to take the first idea that comes to our head. That's what most people do. We will sit down and we'll think of an idea. Right, we're sitting down, you know, I've turned off everything, everything's quiet, I'm sitting in the room or we're doing a brainstorm, and I'll think of an idea and I have to think of something quickly, right? I have to, because otherwise someone else will think about it and I'll look stupid. And then the first idea that comes to my head, that's the idea I'll put on paper. And I'll go with that, because brilliant, I've got an idea now, I'm comfortable. I'm okay now. I can relax, I can sit back, and then I can work on that idea. And I'll make it better, and I'll work on it, and I'll improve it over time, but it's the first idea. The really good innovators, the really good innovation comes when you take that first idea and you put it to one side and you go, nah, don't like it. It might be the best idea, but you know what? I won't buy the first coat I try. I'll go to another shop, and I'll try another one. I'll go for another idea. I'll sit down again, maybe tomorrow, and I'll think again, and I'll try and see if I can get different ideas to the ones I had before. And I'll try to be comfortable with a feeling of unease that I haven't got a solution, that I know I need to deliver something, and I actually haven't got a clue. I don't know what the solution is. And from that feeling of unease, actually, that's where the best ideas come from, because you're letting yourself look into what the solution space is, and you're not taking the first idea that comes to your head and going with that. You're actually looking at multiple ideas and thinking of the best one or choosing the best one that you can. What do we need in order to innovate? What's some of the hygiene factors in order to innovate? So first of all, insights in innovation. So preparation is really key. Before you even start to think about a new idea, the first thing you want to do is understanding the design space. What's out there currently? What do we know about other people developing? That's what we do on a regular basis before we even start any innovation workshop, is we'll send a team to look at things that we know other people are doing, other people have done in the past. IP that's currently being submitted, IP that's expired already. Has anyone done something in the past that we can look at and actually use in this, the relevant space, and see what the state of the art is? As I said, research previous innovations. We'll bring in new perspectives. And what I mean by that is bring in people which drug delivery isn't their natural hunting ground. People who don't do this day in, day out. And to somebody that might look a bit odd because they don't know the space, they'll come up with the most stupid ideas in the world. And I'll come back to the word I just said, stupid, because there is no such thing as a stupid idea. They'll come up with ideas that are completely foreign to us, that we will think, you know, I can't believe you suggested that. That will either never work, or that is such an issue. That obviously shows you don't know the space at all. And it's a huge problem currently. But from those people come the biggest challenges. Those are the people who ask, why do we do it this way? Why can't I do that? Why can't I do this thing that you're saying no one will ever accept it? Why not? But it's the best solution ever. I get that, you know, no one's done it before in this area, but that doesn't mean we can't. And that's where the real key comes in, when you invite those people into your teams, when you bring them in. And another option that you can, approach that you can take is the TRIZ approach, which I don't know if some of you are familiar, is the approach in itself maintains that basically every problem that we have has already been solved in one shape or another, effectively. And there are a finite number of solutions to every problem, physical solutions, not an actual solution to the problem, but that there is a way to solve things. You need to move fluid, well, you need to pump it, or there is another way to do it. And this is a very systematic approach in actually looking at each problem and saying, okay, what possible solutions could you actually use to that problem? And we use that ahead of an innovation workshop, just looking at what are the possible things we can do to pump fluid through a system. How do we do it? Is there more than one way? What's the best way? Well, we don't know. But let's look at all the ways. And the last thing is give it time. Don't rush it. And I know it's so simple, right? But it's one of the main problems. We always have to get to a solution really, really quickly. Give it time. Look at it for the first time. Find ideas. Get back to them at a later stage. You know, let it lie for a while, for a day or two. Think about it, and then come back to them, have a look at them again, and try again. And that's where most of the good ideas come from. And when I say stand on the shoulder of giants, I really mean it. Look at things that people have done in the past. That's probably the best place to start. Now, some of the barriers to innovation. These days, collaboration is crucial. And I can't stress it enough. Collaboration between teams, collaboration between yourself and other teams, collaboration between you and suppliers is crucial to get any sort of innovation, any sort of problem solved. Not invented here is something that we see on a regular basis from people where they have a huge issue in accepting, and we're not talking about us telling them what to do, even accepting that someone's already solved the problem that I'm trying to solve. I can get at least partially to the solution by just looking at something someone else has done in the past. There's already something out there that someone has done that can take me 90% of the way, and all I have to do is take it to the final steps. That will never work because, and again, that's where we bring those people in who are outside of the space to get rid of the "that will never work because they challenge us, because that's why won't it work? What's the reason? Risk aversion. So being afraid to try new things because they're risky, because they might fail. Singular perfection. And what I mean by that is someone trying to do everything on their own and to get it absolutely perfect. And we see it on a regular basis, especially with young engineers. They really try to excel, and they try to get the whole problem fixed. They try to solve every little aspect, but most problems these days are way too big to do that. It's just impossible to do one person. It's not possible to solve most of the time. And it's very rare that you see a problem which is completely solved by just one person with no other involvement from anyone else. And the last thing is knowing when to stop. Because if it's one thing that you see time and time again is people go, well, if I just added one more thing, it'll make it better. It's true, but it'll also complicate the problem. So multidisciplinary innovation is the key. As I said, challenges today are greater than any one person, and using a whole team is probably the best way to get to a problem quickly. So some good practices in any innovation. Data is key. And I know, Anne, you said that yesterday. We have to have data not just in clinical trials. We have to have data in any innovation we do. It's brilliant to have a good idea, but we really need to prove it. And I said, fail fast, but I don't like failing. So I'd like to learn fast. I don't want to build stuff or make stuff or design stuff that will fail just for the sake of failure, so I know it's not the right thing. I'd like to build it and test it and then learn from what didn't work, but also find out what did work so I can take it on to the next one. Prototype versus understanding the technology. Something we see a lot is in innovation is running straight to prototyping. I'd like a working prototype. I'd like it to work tomorrow. When we get the prototype, they always say, so how robust is this technology? So how repeatable is the data? Can we take it and use it? Well, no, this is just a prototype. If you want to know how robust this technology, you need to understand the technology, not to build a working prototype. N equal one is not a data set. So again, one prototype won't tell you what the solution is. It won't even tell you if it'll work long term. It'll tell you that you've made it work once, right? And that's it. And actually, N equals two or three really isn't good enough. And you've got to keep iterating, and you've got to increase your data sets to actually understand how good your solution is over time. And be honest with yourself. Be honest with the solution. Be honest with the issues you can see with it, even if it's your baby. Make sure that you're honest with yourself and you tell yourself, okay, I think it's a good solution, but I have a few concerns. And understanding current development phase limitations is the best way to ensure long-term success. If you understand what the limitations are now, you can see what to do with them in the future. Unknowns, which is, I don't know if you ever heard this, we call it the Rumsfelds. I used to put a picture of him, but yeah, that didn't go down very well, so I don't anymore. Unknown unknowns is the nightmare of every engineer, really, in any sort of product development, in any innovation. It's the one thing I don't know is going to hit me. The things that I know I don't know, I can test to, I can build to, I can design. The ones I don't even know are going to happen are the worst ones, and I'm sure pretty much all of you sitting in this room have had at one time in your career seen something you go, I didn't even think that was possible. Right? So how do you reduce the risk? You can't get rid of unknowns unknowns. There is no way. I haven't found one. If any one of you has, please tell me after this. We've been trying to solve it for years. But scope the design space to understand hidden areas. Which areas you don't really know about, you've never tested, you've never actually seen. Test representative products, and I can't stress that enough. We usually test prototypes, especially in mechanics. We always test prototypes because it's actually very hard to test the final product because you need to mold it, because you need to get to a complete product to do that, and that takes a long time. So we'll test non-representative products and make assumptions on that. When we develop products, a lot of the time, especially those days, we were talking about connectivity and digital, we work in that space quite often, and the first thing we get asked is, isn't electronics really complicated? And isn't that going to be, you know, I'm worried about that. Mechanics I understand, but electronics not so much. And actually electronics is a lot easier than mechanics because you can iterate very, very quickly. With mechanics, you actually have to build the representative sample of whatever you're making and test it, and that takes time. Continuously evaluate your understanding of the design or the product. What do I mean by that? You've made a change? Have a look again. We get into a stage where in innovation we get tunnel vision. We're so fixated on a product, we've done it, we've worked on it for a year, and we're absolutely sure it's fine, and we've just added to it. Every time we change something, we need to look at the product, reevaluate the product again or the design again to make sure that we haven't changed something that's critical. And get an external review and tribal knowledge. What do I mean by that? The first company I ever worked for had a room full of retired engineers sitting playing chess and Scrabbles. That's all they did all day long, and drink tea. That was the other thing. That's all they did. They were paid a full salary, and they did nothing else. And the first time I came there, I queried it. I said, I don't get what these people are doing. And over time, you could see that every once in a while, when someone designed a new device, they would come to them, and they would be, you know, they'd be quite scared of even presenting the idea. And they would go to them and present the idea and say, look, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And those guys would look at, and women would look at the idea and go, right, I've done this like 40 years ago, and here are the problems you're going to see. Now, I know a lot of companies that have tried to preserve data from 60, 100 years of experience. That's actually quite hard to preserve that tribal knowledge. Those people, those experienced people with long-term experience are crucial. Show your designs to external people. Get them from elsewhere if you need to. People with long-term experience in the industry have seen things. They've got the scars. They've done this. You know, it's failed on them once before, so it's worth asking. And embrace failure. Failure is an integral part of innovation. You'd probably fail 9 times out of 10. And the reason I say that, because you've got to prepare for failure. You've got to have a team in place. And I don't mean the team that's already doing the project. Once it fails, you need to have another team to help you review the project, because the team that's already doing the project or the innovation or the device is too embedded that they can't see a new solution. They're already so entrenched in what they have. And you've got to understand the failure and be able to replicate it in order to solve it. And that's not simple. Take your time. Make sure your solution is the right one. And step back and evaluate the new product. That's one of the most important things I see. There is time and time again where we see products that we come in and are asked to fix. And you look at the chain of events. And it starts with a really simple problem that someone solved, and that created another problem that then they have to solve, and that created another problem that they had to solve. And each time there's another addition, but you get to the end result and you look and you go, oh my God, it's a patch on a patch on a patch on a patch. And no one ever stepped back to actually look at the design and go, hold on, we can do this differently. We can reevaluate our paradigm and think of how we actually solve this again from a different perspective, rather than keep adding the patches one increment at a time. And the last thing is, does it feel right? And that's a feeling. It really is. And when you see an elegant solution, and think about in your everyday life when you suddenly found something that you go, oh my God, how did I not think of that before? When someone else does something, you go, that's a brilliant idea. It's exactly that. You'll see it. When someone does something that is so elegant and so simple, you'll go, okay, that is a good idea. I can tell it's a good idea. In summary, innovate successfully, prepare to innovate. So first of all, get the right team, which has to be diverse and informed. Make sure they know what the area they're innovating is. Ensure the mindset is appropriate and give it time, so they actually have time to innovate. Have evidence-based methodical development. So not the innovation itself isn't the only thing. You have to make sure it actually gets to the finish line, and accept failure and prepare for it. And the last thing is, be ready to feel uncomfortable. Questions? Thank you.
Any questions? Because otherwise I've got one ready. Please, go ahead.
Beta has no limit. How you decide that your results are good enough?
What has no limits, or I didn't?
I said beta has no limit.
Yeah.
How you decide that you finish, that it is good enough?
That's a good question. And it's not an easy one to answer, actually. It's a team decision. And there are various ways. I'm not going to go into them now. It'll take me a while. You can rate them. There are matrices. You can do. There are a lot of things you can do to decide what's good enough. But when you first set on this journey, you set yourselves targets that you need to hit. And usually the good enough is when you've hit those targets. And you'll see people who keep adding to those things. And it's very easy to see, because you go, well, we have a solution. And then you'll always get someone say, but if we only did this, it would be so much better. Is it needed? That's the question you need to ask. That's how you know it's good enough. Do you actually need the extra addition to solve the problem? If you don't, then why are you adding it? Because you're adding complexity to the system. If you don't need it, don't do it.
Other questions? Anybody else? So I have time for mine. You said initially something about talking to people who aren't necessarily in the field and can look at things and have a fresh perspective. Is that sort of what you were saying, asking some people that might not be in this area and saying, what do you think about these ideas or how would you think you'd solve this problem? And they might have some ideas one would never think of. And that's what I call maybe the beginner's mind of sorts. And, yeah. And you know, what Linus Pauling had said when he teach Chem 1A was he got some of the best ideas from some of the students because they weren't so inured to some of the classical ideas or didn't already know so many things. So this has a basis. And then in one of your latter slides, you spoke about talking to people that have a great deal of background and knowledge and potentially institutional knowledge from wherever they're working. So talking to them as well. Now, those same people may be naysayers of sorts. Oh, it couldn't be done. How do you juxtapose those two ideas?
That's a great question. The first one, the initial team, the subset of people who aren't from the discipline, we actually have them on the team. So we don't just ask them. We actually ask them to join the team. They're part of the innovation. The experts who may be naysayers... you have to take it with a pinch of salt. You can't, you still use your judgment, but where they are most appropriate is understanding what has happened in the past and what problems you can see. Rather than asking them whether your solution is good or not, you go, what kind of problems am I going to see with this? I've done this. This is my idea. Where do you think it'll fail? Not it won't work. Where do you think it won't work? Which issues am I going to have with it? And very specific. Tell me which things you've seen in the past that have failed. That's where you'd use the most. Because they've seen it, or hopefully have seen it, and you can learn from that, rather than failing again.
You're right. I have one additional question.
Okay, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. In terms of integrating device into development programs, I mean, I know that is improving, but how do you see that in the last 10 to 20 years, and how do you think it's going to improve going forward?
It's improving, but it's also more challenging. I think if you look at early developments, take 20 years ago, devices rarely existed. So any pharma company needing a device developed its own, right? And they worked, that basically you had two teams, one developing the formulation and one developing the device. And those had to meet at some point and go together to a trial. It may have taken a lot longer, but those teams were working for the same goal. These days, we're seeing a lot of, because of added risk, a lot of times where you'll try to find a solution as late as possible in the game, rather than having to invest in a device 5 or 6 years before you even know whether your formulation is going to go to the market. You don't want to do that because that's still an investment. You'll invest at the very last moment, and at that point, it's a race, right? And you don't want to be late. Yeah. The one thing you don't want to do is have your device fail and not deliver the formulation or be late, and everyone's screaming for you to get there in time because the clinical trial is going to be late because of your device rather than formulation.
So typically post phase two still?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I'll tell you one thing that's getting better, though, the collaboration. We are seeing, when we're now sitting down with device teams, we're seeing formulators in the room. We're seeing manufacturing people in the room. From the onset, from the first... meeting we have when you've just got this is the problem statement. We're seeing those people in the room. And that's a huge change. We haven't seen that before.
I just found out we have a little bit more time, so I do have time for another question or two. Okay.
Just a quick question. What would you describe as kind of the cultural values or attributes of an organization that's, you know, can support the methodologies and sort of principles that you talked about?
Yeah. I mentioned before about the there's no such thing as a stupid idea. There are a few things that you don't want to have. One thing is you don't want to have a process that is too onerous. So, you know, what's the process of innovation? Those two don't go together because innovation and process clash a lot of the time. It has to be a rapidly innovating organization, even within a big one. It has to be used to iterating and improvising very quickly. There are ways where I've seen organizations do that, even internally, where they have internal innovation teams. And you do that in various... because, you know, we'll still work on a project, right? And it might be a five-year project. How do you keep a team innovating when they do a five-year-long project? You take them on hackathons for a week, right? You take them out of there and you give them a problem that has nothing to do with what we're doing at the moment. But solve me a problem in a week and give me a solution. I want a prototype on my desk. And you know, work day and night to get that done. And that gets their juices flowing. That's how they get or retain their innovation spirit, if you like, even within a long-term project. Make sure they break some of the rules, because they need to. That's what you do when you're innovating, right? You're trying to break the rules constantly. Otherwise, you're just improving.
Drug Delivery West is produced by the Conference Forum. The next drug delivery event is the 8th annual Pod Conference happening October 17th through the 19th in Boston. To get on our mailing list for future drug delivery podcasts, email us at service@tcfllc.org. And for more information about our drug delivery conferences, visit us at theconferenceforum.org. Thanks for listening.